again. We're going to start the meeting.
6:15.
Folks. Hello, gentlemen. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to open the meeting for the a joint meeting with the Economic Development, Tourism, Housing, Planning, Transit Committee, and the UND Corridor Advisory Committee. Before we start, first of all, I want to thank the legislative staff. They've done a lot of work over the last few days putting a lot of the questions together and kind of trying to make some things a little easier for everybody. So I certainly appreciate the extra time and effort they put in. Also, the as our county attorney and the executive's office with putting staff together such that we can get as many of the questions answered as possible. Some of the questions did come in a little late, so hopefully we have answers for those. If we do not, those answers will then forthcoming. So I certainly appreciate the extra effort that those folks put in. Tonight we have compiled some of the questions and then answers, and we have that before us. Again, we have the county attorney and the planning department assisting us with those answers today. One of the things that I would mention is, as answers are given out, we're not going to get in a debate. If the question is, how much is 3 and 3, and one person says 7, and you think it's 5, we're not going to debate that. Now, even I know when I went to Ellenville, it's 6. But that doesn't, as everybody says, we have 4 attorneys and 5 answers. So, just let's hold it to civil decorum, if you will. So, with that said, Dee, do you want to have an opening?
Yeah, I would like to open. First of all, I would really like to thank all of you for giving us this opportunity to bring it back to answer your question. As you know, we've been getting questions up until yesterday afternoon. We've prepared a packet for you, for all legislators. You'll see it's got the seal of the county on it. We've taken the questions that you've given all of us, and we have compiled them so that they're answered. We have answered every question that we have received so far, and we're here to answer more questions tonight, if in fact, and I'm sure there will be, more questions. But I just want to start out with a little overview, because I noticed that there, last night when we met and in discussions with legislators, there was areas that seemed to have more concern than others. And I also want to extend to you the opportunity, as you already have in legislators, to feel free to pick up the phone and call me if you need some question answered on this or any other thing. Some of you have my cell phone number. I'm not going to give it out publicly, but if you call my office,
I know.
My biggest problem is trying to explain to people when they call that I represent the county and I can't represent them. I can't answer their questions. But if you call my office and I'm not available, identify yourself as a legislator to my staff member first, and they'll give you my cell phone.
Okay. How do you do this?
So over 100 years ago, in 1911, the city of New York entered into an agreement with the Ulster and Delaware Railroad Company. And that granted that railroad company a perpetual easement. It's an 11.5-acre easement. And it was conveyed thereafter by quitclaim deed to the county of Ulster in 1979. The easement runs through 3 towns. And the history behind it is very interesting. We did provide a copy of the easement, which is on file, obviously, with the county clerk, to staff yesterday. And if you read that easement, you will learn why and how this all came about. And I found that very interesting myself because, as we know, the Shokan Reservoir and all the other reservoirs were built at the turn of the century. The railroad at the time was in the middle of the area where the dam was being built and the area was going to be flooded. So the railroad, UND, then had to move the tracks in order to continue their railroad. So they entered into this easement with the city of New York, and the city of New York paid them $1.3 million, which is quite a lot of money at that time, for the purpose of moving the tracks to where they are now, where they presently exist. And in fact, it says that these were for all loss, damage, or expenses incurred by the railroad for changing the route or the location of the present line between the stations of Stony Hollow and Boysville. So I thought that was pretty interesting. The agreement states in several places that this is a perpetual easement and an exclusive easement for railroad purposes. The easement has not been extinguished, nor can it be extinguished unilaterally. It has to have a modification. If it has to be modified or it is modified, it has to be modified by the party. So it can't change as it exists now without an agreement. We began working with local council sometime late last summer, early fall. And initially, we were attempting to modify the easement. But it became very apparent to us as we went through that process, and they explained to us their time schedules and their procedures in the city of New York, which are much more onerous than what you guys have here, that that was going to take a very long time. They said 18 months would be quick if it occurred that quickly. So what we decided was that we would start to work on a path to, one, secure the $2.25 million and get into a position where we were able to start modifying the easement or rail banking, which are both discussed in this in agreement covered. And the path to that is the agreement that you see before you today and a permit that's going to begin the process. It's going to begin the process of letting us plan, construct, and do all of the things that are necessary while we simultaneously move towards that other avenue that has been our goal. Section 3E of the agreement states, and this is important because we insisted upon this initially and we held fast on it, except as the parties consensually agreed to undertake in the future as set forth herein, this agreement does not modify or extinguish in any manner whatsoever the Ashokan Railroad easement as described, and then there's a description of where it's filed in the county court's office. So that's where it exists and that's where it stays until we change it. The questions we received over the past 3 days were interesting, challenging, and we put our heads together with the help of my staff, and I don't know if you all know, but this is Tracy Steves, one of the newest members of my staff, and John Engel. And they've been working on this for quite some time since they've become part of my staff, as well as Chris White and Dennis Doyle from the planning department. So at this stage, I'd say it's up to you, Chairman, Chairwoman, how you want to proceed. We can go through the questions and answers, or we can, because I know you haven't had time to read them, because we just finished putting them together. So up to you.
You want to go?
I think we should.
Yeah, let's just, yeah. We'll go through these.
I'm going to turn that over to you, Beth O'Craig, and Chris, and I will
vote. Now,
and just to note, these came in four separate batches. So some of the questions are similar or even identical, and we just organized them by, as you'll see in the table of contents, we organized them from the source from whom they came, and we took the original document and then just added in the answers in color in red.
So the answers in red are our responses to whomever asked the question.
I have a couple questions, not debates or anything. Should we do those as we move through or wait till the end? In glancing at it, I have a couple questions.
Well, we'll start in the beginning and just move through them. So if we get to a question where you have a question,
ask it then.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Question on the question.
Do you mean?
Clarification. Now, B, do you want to just read the question and then give the answer? I mean.
Chris and I will handle that.
The
first question, this is the first set of questions that we're responding to in deference to his authority and the chairman's, obviously. Okay. So he asked for initially a copy of the agreement that I just talked to you about, the easement, and we provided that to the legislative staff yesterday. So that's the answer to that question. Chris, you want to continue with somebody?
Question two, in the fifth, whereas, would anything besides a resolution of the legislature deem freight use infeasible? We noted that this clause is related to the option to pursue federal rail banking. The determination that freight rail use is infeasible would actually be made by the STB, should we go for a ruling on that.
I'll read the question.
Okay.
explain the relevance of the National Trail System Act.
Okay, hold on. Hold on.
You have a question?
Didn't you say we could do the questions as we go? That's what I just asked you.
Yes.
Okay.
And they're reading the question and giving the answer.
It's very good.
It is hard to hear. So
it is. If
I'm not loud enough.
Can we get a microphone out?
Okay.
In the fifth paragraph,
yeah, do you don't have a question on two. You didn't. Did you?
I have a question on number two.
Okay.
It focuses on freight, but it doesn't refer to passenger or tourist. So
yeah, that's one of your questions. And
so that's somewhere else.
Yeah, but I'll be glad to answer it, and then we could skip it when we get there. Basically, the reason freight is specifically mentioned is it was requested by our rail banking attorney, and it basically gives you it leaves you an option of doing federal rail banking. Our perpetual easement. Hello. Vaughn, you should know not to hand me anything that I can break.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
It's okay. The legislature can't use them either.
Hello.
Okay.
So the freight, the inclusion of freight, preserves our ability to do rail banking under one of the scenarios in which we might choose to do rail banking. It doesn't in any way cede other uses of passenger or tourism railroad. We retain that. Understand, this agreement retains our perpetual easement for railroad uses. That's for any railroad use, not just freight. So the reason we specified freight is that's language that allows us to go back and do rail banking. In one of the scenarios that we might.
Is it a hierarchy within the rail structure?
Well, typically, to be under federal jurisdiction, you run freight or passenger. Tourism railroads or excursion railroads, is sometimes they don't always have STB jurisdiction. Freight does have, if freight and transit have STB jurisdiction. And is that?
Why wouldn't you want to also include passenger in your rail banking?
Well, that could occur when we do the rail banking, but our legal advice from our expert, who does renown, Andrea Furster, said that this language is important to keep in the MO. Freight is something that you can look at when you do certain petitions to the STB.
Passenger would be included. If we rail bank, we're rail banking the future. The corridor for any future railroad
any
use, passenger, freight. The reason for this language is in case we seek a certificate that would allow us to go for rail banking. You would, it was language that the attorney said put in there so that you're safe when you go back and rail bank, so that you show an intent at some point to have future operations.
I just seems curious that you would ask for freight and not both, or
we're not asking for freight. When you rail bank, you don't specify what your the certificate of need would be for freight, and that brings it under STB jurisdiction.
I have one question. The whereas is in this agreement, I know the agreement, you know, sets forth afterwards, you know, the obligations, and so. Are the whereases, they also legally binding?
The whereases are a prelude to the terms and conditions of the agreement. So the whereases have some effect, but the legally binding terms and conditions are the ones that follow. Usually says now, I think it says in agreement. Now, therefore, you know, be it
right.
Agreed, okay.
And that question comes up
and
later.
It is in that section as well. So it's covered in that section as well.
Have to be a long
way. On a couple of occasions, you mentioned things that you've received from Andrea Furster. Are any of those in writing?
We have one document only in writing, and that's a letter that we received from her several months ago. I think you already have that.
Okay.
Great.
Great.
Explain the relevance of the National Trail System Act to this project as referenced in the sixth whereas.
The National Trail System Act is the legal mechanism under which you can do interim trail use on a rail banked corridor. So that's why that's referenced.
County
and again, that provides interim trail use with rail bank. Once you restore the rail, that trail use ends.
Thing I know. And to wrap your arms around it, you just got to have to think about is that you're saving your right to have rail. Should you just stop? If you put a trail in when you go through this system, you're saving your right to put rail in should it become something that in the foreseeable future is something that the county wants to do, or who knows what's going to happen 100 years from now.
And more than 700 rail corridors have been rail banked for interim trail use.
Another thing that I believe I've talked to this about, another thing that I think I talked to Chris about this a couple of times, Chris White, I think a couple of Chris's around, that the rail banking and preserving the possibility of going back to rail is important, should the DEP exercise their option to not renew the agreement, because then we'd lose the corridor for trail and the only option would be to build rail back.
Well, that's why we're also pursuing a modified easement in the same breath, going for a modified easement, which would modify the easement so that we could do rail or we could do trail. So we're looking for several mechanisms to preserve the county's rights here, not just one.
Doesn't that contradict the very basic second whereas?
Man, I can use the mic.
I'm sorry. Doesn't it contradict the second whereas, which speaks of conversion to rail trail only? So if we're accepting the money, aren't we accepting that condition?
Page 2.
Well, the whereas
page
is
two,
a prelude, as
you
said, to the agreement.
Oh, I'm sorry.
See it in the whereas.
Page 2, second whereas.
I'm sorry.
Oh.
Second or seven?
Seven.
It's the second one on page 2.
That's correct.
The basic.
The sixth one.
Second one on page
2? Yeah.
Here it is. Right. If the freight uses.
Oh, the, okay. The,
all
right. Ben, would you clarify your question? I'm not quite clear.
By accepting the funding, we are committed to the conversion of the UND corridor along the watershed property to rail trail only. So how can you accept the money and commit to trail only and rail bank?
Because that's a whereas, and that's not what the whereas says here. That's a whereas, and what it does is it gives a history of how we got to where we are. We're talking about Resolution 275. I presume that's the one you're looking at. Okay. The terms and conditions are very clear. In fact, I read the one from Section 3E that says that we are not giving up our rights, okay, unless the parties agree in the future to do that. We are consistent, and we have been consistent with the City of New York, that we are going to preserve our rights for rail. How do we do that? We rail bank or we modify the easement so that rail and trail, and it's not just rail only.
And the two things that you mentioned, the taking the money and converting it to trail only, again, think in terms of for the next X amount of years, is perfectly consistent with rail banking, which then preserves the integrity of your corridor for future rail use. For instance, let's say there's something that happens with climate change and 100 years from now, population moves up here and there's a demand that warrants the restoration of railroad. You still have that ability to do that through the rail banking. We also, even without rail banking, the modified easement protects our long-term railroad easement. At any point, we could go back and say, we're prepared now to put back railroad. We would lose the interim trail use, but you never lose the rail use. That's there forever. And that was one of the contentious. I mean, we fought hard in the negotiations to ensure that remained in the agreement.
And
and that's one of the things that we heard during the debates last August. So we knew that was important to you, it was important to us, and it's in the, it's throughout the agreement. Number...
Just one more comment.
We're still on page one.
My question and my look was much more focused on the MOA, not the resolution, which is why I was momentarily confused by Manna's question as well, because that was looking at the MOA and not the resolution. But it does, I hear Manna's point to this whereas, and since it's just a whereas, could we consider potentially removing this whereas from the resolution? Because the MOA, the
this
city...
You're talking about the resolution.
I'm talking about 187, okay. Our resolution, okay. not the MOA. But because the MOA acknowledges everything Chris just talked about, preserves our right to rail bank, preserves our right to rail, exactly what you talked about in section whatever, 3E or whatever it was, why do we want to put a whereas in our resolution highlighting the fact that the commissioner of the city is committed to converting it to rail trail only?
Which we're at?
The one that Manna was talking about. Whereas, page 2 in the resolution, not the MOA.
Got it.
Where is the MOU? It's a whereas.
It seems to me.
We mostly put it in there for background. Again, the whereases are kind of set the table for the action you're taking.
I get it, but because the MOA is acknowledging our rights and working hard to preserve our rights, then what's, you know...
We don't have an issue with taking that out.
I would suggest that.
Okay. I think the purpose was to just give you a history of how we got to where we were.
Like, how did we get from here to there?
Okay. I understand, but there's sensitivity.
So we're up to number four? More questions. Four. Whereas the county was designed with the Shokan Rail Trail subject to DEC approval, what is the process?
So the process of design would be that the county goes out for with an RFP or an RFQ to get an engineering firm that could come in and do the engineering and design on it. That contract would be subject to legislative approval. It would be a public planning process with community meetings. We've already told many of the groups and communities in the area of Olive and Shandaken and Hurley and Woodstock that we would have their input. We've talked to groups like the Federation of Sportsmen, the Federated Sportsmen, and others about having these public meetings and stakeholder meetings. So, again, before, the way we've done other rail trails is you get input from the community, you do some preliminary design, you come back with some facts and ideas on how to do this, you refine that, and you move it to a final design. I'm guessing that would... We're going to have to do a lot of environmental work as well along the way. We have to do wetland delineation, Endangered Species Act analysis. We're going to have to do water quality analysis because we're in the watershed as well. So that's the process. And construction wouldn't begin until we have a final design, until we have an operation and maintenance plan, and until we have a security agreement and we have an approved project. So again, we would do the planning first, and as we've done with other capital projects, once we do the planning, we have more information to bring back to you. We would then form the capital project for the construction phase. So this comes back to you multiple times before any construction happens, which likely wouldn't happen until the end of next year at the earliest.
Okay. Thank you. This question just came to me as we're reading this here. So subject to DEP approval, does that open us up in any way to having the DEP serve on scoring committees or anything like that when it comes to the contracts that are going to be coming forward for the engineering, design, construction?
There was no specific commitment for that.
Okay.
No.
Unless you want the DEP on a scoring
committee. I don't. Okay. That's why I asked you the question.
Understand that the county attorney's office will be negotiating with them on your behalf as well as plans, okay?
That's a good question.
I just want to follow up with that because I had a similar question, too. So final approval, give you a hypothetical situation that the county is planning on doing this one way. It's going to cost X amount of dollars. and the DEP is staunchly protecting its watershed, and now it's going to cost five times more. Is that the kind of approval that we're talking about?
We've already been talking to DEP at a staff level for a long time about this. I don't see a scenario where we get to almost a final thing and then they veto it. Because frankly, we're going to bring them on very early in the process to talk about the environmental constraints, to talk about water quality issues. One of the things that they recognize is trail use is one of the lighter impact things on their watershed. So keep in mind, Carl, one of the things we'll be doing is removing thousands of creosote-laden ties. We will be stabilizing areas that are now eroding, like the Butternut Creek culvert, where sediment is going into the Ashokan. So, I mean, a lot of those things we already accept. We know we want to do the right thing on that. I don't see a scenario where they would add to the cost five times. We may have some pushback on areas where they think we need fencing and we may not, but I don't think it's going to be... when we've had initial discussions about it, we generally agree where that would be. And it's in areas that you want to protect users so we don't have people getting hurt on the trail.
This is another thing that came to me after discussions with folks who used to fish up there. And I hope I was paying good enough attention to Carl's question. I'm not repeating something because I was over talking to our attorney. So there's going to be a lot of, as we saw on the walk, there's going to be a lot of fencing that's going to be required in certain areas. Some of those areas also serve as informal access points for fishers and hunters off of the, you know, over the corridor, through the corridor. Is there a possibility that the DEP could use the fencing requirements to keep fishers out of those areas, and would the county stand up to that and be able to meet the case and stuff?
I don't believe that they would do that. They're firmly committed to keeping fishing and hunting.
And
we have a provision in the agreement that says hunting and fishing are compatible adjacent land uses. We're committed to having this be access for fishers and hunt and people who hunt. What I would see, Ken, is probably we would more maybe formalize those access points so they don't continue to erode like they are, and maybe you have signage beyond this point, you need to have a DEP access permit. Because for those of you that may not know, right now, if you want to go up to that area of the Ashokan, you have to have a hunting or a fishing permit and an access use permit from DEP. That will continue to be the case. If you want to hunt on their lands, if you want to fish in the reservoir, you will need that access. As long as you're on the trail, you don't need any permit or access from them.
Number five, the 10th whereas says that the county obtains a certificate or upon written request from the city or county. Why would the county need a certificate if we can make a written request?
We don't need a certificate. Basically, the certificate is, again, an option for rail banking, which is an option that we have, we could use or we might not use.
But the county doesn't need anything, but as long as we, you know, enter into this agreement with them, then to go ahead and begin the process. We are planning on doing that as simultaneously as possible with the other areas that we've discussed, the modified easement and the rail bank.
Again, keep in mind that rail banking essentially does two things. It preserves the integrity of your railroad corridor so that people don't go back and try to take pieces of it back, but it also allows interim trail use. The memorandum of understanding of agreement and the subsequent easement that we do essentially will do the same thing. It preserves our easement, but allows us interim trail use. So in a way, it's like local rail banking. So we could do this and achieve both goals with or without rail banking.
Section 1825 is the question number six. $2.5 million goes to the county for planning, design, and construction of the trail. Do we know the estimated cost of planning, design, and construction of the trail?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I have one more question. Okay, so rail banking is going to be the option, or it's one of our options?
It's one of our options.
Okay, and then you mentioned the creosote-laden ties. Would you remove the ties?
Yes.
In the rail banking?
Yes.
You would?
You can for rail banking, and we've seen this in hundreds of other corridors, you're allowed to remove the ties, the track, the other track materials. You need to preserve the integrity of the corridor, though. We couldn't rail bank and sell pieces of this off to adjacent landowners. That you're not allowed to do. But you can remove the track and the ties. And a lot of the ties in this section, as you know from our walk, are you know, they're pretty old. So on the funding, you want to move to the funding, or we so we have 2.5 that would come through the MOA from DEP. We have $2 million that was awarded in 2013 through the Environmental Protection Fund. So the available funding from the state and DEP is $4.5 million. Based on engineering that OSI has paid for and helped us do, we understand that we could build this trail, the entirety of the trail, with the exception of Butternut Creek Culvert, for approximately $4 million. And the design cost would be about $300,000 to $400,000. The Butternut Cove, we have additional funding that we've received through a water quality grant, and we have just applied for more money through the Ashokan Stream Management Program. So again, think about the fact that we'll probably phase this project, and we can easily build the first phase, and we can do all of the second phase with the available money, but for a piece of the Butternut Cove. And we're going after additional dollars for that. We have another CFA round that we will go out. We will continue to seek private and other public funds for this. But right now, we're pretty close to paying for that trail.
Facilities be provided, available, and maintained year-round as a question of sanitary facilities. These need to get into the planning stage to determine where they're going to be and whether or not they will be provided year-round depending on the size, the amount of use, and other factors.
But that's also determined by the city.
Yeah. Well, the city has an inherent interest in providing sanitary facilities, because should they not provide sanitary facilities, the other option that trail users would have would probably not be acceptable to them. We've talked about the trailheads with parking will very likely have sanitary facilities. They're open year-round, so the facilities will be open year-round. Someone asked in a subsequent question about plowing. We would expect and push for maintenance to include plowing, because people need to be able to access that for cross-country skiing, for snowshoeing, and throughout the winter.
But not plowing of the trail.
No.
Excellent.
No, we think this is actually one of the opportunities here is for people to rent skis and snowshoes, and to connect to some of the hospitality businesses up there, and really, you know, try to make this area more a four-season area.
Will the proposed trail follow the existing bed with no deviation for any reason whatsoever?
We sure hope so.
Yeah.
I have a question on it, if I might. Up toward the Moistful Way is a trestle that we were told for years, which just cost a fortune to rebuild. Now it's going to be rebuilt, I gather, if we're going to follow the existing trail. Will it be rebuilt to the standards that could potentially carry freight or trains again? Okay, now here's my point. Probably the length of a luxury liner, 2 or 3 football fields away, the DEP is building another bridge across the creek. We're going to spend $2 or $3 million or whatever the amount is to build the bridge where the trestle is, and just down the road a short bit. And the DEP people have told me they will construct a biking lane. This sort of makes no sense to me.
We will look at that in the planning process. There,
but you have to use the same trail. You just said that you must.
No. We didn't say we must. We said we'd like to use the trail because it minimizes costs.
Yes. Do you have to use the same trail? Yeah.
No. Well, let's read the answer, John. It says, will the proposed trail follow the existing bed with no deviation? The trail will follow the existing bed to the maximum extent possible. If we find that we don't have sufficient funds or there are reasons not to reconstruct the Boyceville Trestle, like we have a more sensible alternative, we'll pursue that. Now, the other
alternative is not written in that. It says will follow
to the extent possible. That leaves us a lot of latitude.
So it's always possible.
Yeah.
But it might not be a good idea. That's different than possible.
Well, a lot of this will be vetted through the planning process. The other thing to keep in mind is we have applied, we have a FEMA award for the restoration of the Boyceville Trestle. We have applied for a rescoping of that project because the money that was allocated to the county for the replacement in kind of the structure was not sufficient. And it also called for, two of the girders are downstream, and the original scope of work called for reusing those. And our engineers said, you don't want to reuse those. There's been too much stress on the metal. You want to put new girders in. So, John, if we get the approval from FEMA to go ahead with that bridge project and we can use federal money to rebuild it, there's no reason not to do that.
Well, but it seems to me there's no sense in building something within 1,000 feet of each other.
But
over the same body of work.
But again, I would leave that to the planning process so we can ascertain what the constraints are.
You've seen that in the discussions, that's all.
Well, it will be.
It hasn't been in there. I'd like to sort of do one other thing. Go back to number one, if I might.
Oh, boy.
Well, you don't even look at it. I just got the 1911 agreement yesterday. I had to find a magnifying glass so I could read it. So I haven't had a chance to thoroughly digest it. But there's one area in here that says it's number 7, and I'm not expecting you to follow it at this point.
But we haven't memorized.
The city agrees to construct and maintain in perpetuity the Glenford Dyke in such a manner as is... that I can hardly read.
Should I go get the magnifying glass?
A microphone?
Magnifying glass.
Yeah, I think at least for standard embankment.
The Glenford Dyke, I did not find that language anywhere in the MOA.
Okay.
And a dyke, according to the definition that I have, is a natural or artificial slope to regulate water levels. Wait, let me finish. The trail will be on top of that, and it says, without that wording, we're going to be maintaining that.
No, in the agreement, we have language that talks about the reconstruction of the dikes. The dikes are owned and maintained by the city. The only thing that we own on that is the railroad infrastructure and the right-of-way. So, for instance, the DEP is going to be reconstructing these dikes at some point in the 2020s or 2030s. What we built into the agreement was during those, if that does come to pass and they do rebuild these, they have to, if they need to move our trail temporarily to get equipment in there and stage construction, they may do so, but they have to route around to keep a continuous trail. And in addition, then they need to put the trail back. So the supporting
resulting from DEP activities, including
correct
reconstructions of the dike. If they decide not to reconstruct it, it's our obligation to maintain it.
No.
Well, it doesn't say they maintain it
the trail portion
in the document.
The only property that we have a right to is the trail portion.
The dike.
But we're not amending the 1911 agreement. So their responsibility to maintain those dikes in perpetuity remains in place.
It should be in our document.
That could be in the modified easement, John.
Yeah. I mean, that's something you would address in the easement, so that you would have it in perpetuity.
Understand, with the MOA really is a foundation for building the final modified easement.
Well,
it's a bridge.
It's a real, honest goodness document. It's legal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a binding contract.
All right. Never mind.
There's also a map that shows what it looks like at the end of this.
John, we hear you.
I'll read the rest of it to the best of my ability. Right? So I got to find the mic.
I was hoping you'd ask how we're going to connect to the inn at some point.
I hope I'm alive when this all comes.
I do too. I hope I can come for a beer or something.
Throughout the document, it stated that DEP approval is required on many items. It appears, however, they have no responsibility in reference to the items they approve. Please confirm.
Well, actually, they do have quite a responsibility because they're funding all of the planning and quite a bit of the construction. So their primary responsibility is funding it. And again, that's quite a risk for them. I mean, we don't have to pay them back. If we design this and then we decide not to go forward, there's no provision for us paying them back for the monies we've already spent.
In fact, the agreement is clear, and it says that any money we've expended or obligated up to that time, because we're going to be drawing down money. This is sort of like a drawdown grant. They're going to be sending us a sum of money. We will spend it. We'll give them invoices. They will give us more money until we hit the $2.5 million. So there are provisions in here that protect us so that if we spend their money and at some point they decide or we decide that we don't want to go forward, because it works both ways, then they're not going to claw back the money or try to take the money away from us.
The other responsibility we would develop is through the security agreement, the cooperative security agreement. So we'll figure out, you know, who's responsible for certain aspects of security. Who responds if there's a call from the trail? Who responds if there's a call from the trailhead?
There's some pretty isolated areas there. I hope you really look into that, because I have no worries about that. But let me just say one other thing, if I may. The trailheads in particular stick out sometimes. I understand what they are. But I do have a question with that and other things. What if in the MOA you say they're going to build the trailheads and they don't? Now, somebody can say, they will. I look at the interpretive center just above up the road from where I am. Our congressman funded, got the money for it. They built the $1 million road to nowhere. And that was 22 years ago. Now some other outfits, some other folks, good folks in the community, have revived it. I just hope when you're going down this road that there are consequences if they don't follow through.
And the city can temporarily shut the trail down for water supply purposes. What exactly are the purposes?
These are security threats to their water supply and related infrastructure or public safety threats. And again, we know that all levels of government have the ability to shut down any public facility, whether it's a highway or it's a university or it's a school, in the event of certain public emergencies. This is something that is common, and particularly when you're on the drinking water source for the city of New York, they wanted to make sure that, let's say we had a fire up there and it was, you know, catastrophic, and there was a lot of debris to clear, there was soil to stabilize, they would close that. We would agree to close that with them so that could be stabilized and their water supply is not in peril.
We're not so naive anymore as to believe that something even more horrific could happen.
Can I just say one other thing? I'm a big supporter of the city of New York. I think they do a great job. I think they're great, good neighbors, the whole nine yards. I have seen them close the upper reservoir road just for fun. They didn't want to maintain it. So they closed it. Nothing we can do about it. I mean, that's the city of New York is a country. They got their own, you know, State Department and their Department of Defense. They closed the road across the dam on security reasons. It's continued to be closed. I remember when it happened, they said, well, there's defects in the dam, and, you know, it could be subject to terrorism. Nobody could ever see that document because it's secret. I'll take them at their word for it. But I haven't seen any reconstruction to cure those defects, because the road is still closed. So they can close it arbitrarily if they want, and they might. I think no consequences to
well,
that.
Well, there's always the consequence of them being in breach, whether or not it's a reasonable, they have a reasonable reason for them to close it, whether it really does affect the safety or the public water supply. Any agreement or contract that you have, there's always that consequence that some they could be in breach, we could be in breach. But we're going into this like we do with all of our contracts in good faith, that the parties are going to abide by the terms and conditions. And as Chris said, we have still more. This legislature has still more work to do. Planning has more work to do. We have more work to do in my office. And we want to address all of these issues as we get to the point where each and every issue comes up and we address it as well as we can. Any attorney will tell you, when you devise or you prepare a contract, you try to think of every possible alternative that could arise. And it's impossible, but you do your best.
And best game.
It is.
And John, if I could offer just 2 points to keep in mind. Right now, there's no public access to the Ashokan Reservoir at all, unless you have that access permit. So it is effectively closed. We know that there's no rail running there. There's been no rail, either freight, passenger, or tourism, since 1976.
I went down it. But of course, that was the record.
strike that from the minutes. And then the second point is, they could shut that railroad down even if it was operating. Let's be clear that there is no common carrier status there that would protect it. There's no federal preemption right now that would protect it. If it was an active freight line or a transit line, they might have more trouble. But there's no active rail going on in that part. So if they went into court to say we have a public, a health threat to our, a threat to our drinking water source, and any court is weighing that against a railroad that doesn't run at all, or runs very marginally, the city would have a good case for closing that down anyway.
I think the next question was already answered, so I'd like to skip that one. I think that was the question that Tracy raised, which is. Why does the MOA refer to freight use and the issue of Resolution 275 and the whereas? So if we could, in the sake of time, move to the next one. This one, I think, also has...
And just so people know, we just moved from John, the chairman's questions to Legislator Bartel's questions.
And I think this addresses it also, unless anyone has any further questions about the discussion we had about 275 and freight.
Well, I guess the one thing that wasn't answered is freight, is using the language of freight rail use, which I understand a little better because of Chris's earlier comments tonight, but is using the language of freight rail use the only means to pursue abandonment or rail banking rights? I mean, what would the alternative be? Would we have to say passenger rail use? What? Like you said that the attorney first or suggested we use this as one means. What are the other means?
You wouldn't use passenger service to reactivate the line necessarily, because tourism railroad doesn't. It would have to be real transit. It would have to be like, you know,
right.
Okay, we're going to run Metro North here, and we right now there's very little chance of that. What would be more likely is a resumption of freight services. And that brings it back under the STB jurisdiction. So, again, what we put in the agreement was to enable us not to box ourselves in if we choose to go to rail banking. It doesn't in any way diminish our ability to do any type of rail in the future. Understand that underlying railroad lease allows passenger, allows tourism.
And I understand that. I'm not talking about the future. I'm talking about the means to rail banking. What are the other means to rail banking other than
this would only be a step to rail banking. You would basically do a certificate of need for freight.
We
have several alternatives that we've explored.
That we've explored and we've discussed, and we'll get into them further as we go down this path. But there are others that we have discussed with our consultant.
But so is it safe to assume then that having discussed the other options that the consultant believes that freight is our best option?
Her position was don't by excluding this give up, have it appear that you're giving up your right to do this under the need certificate, she said. Okay, she wanted to acquiesce to it. She's the expert.
And Tracy, let me just try to hone in on this. if your goal is to preserve under rail banking all types of rail operations, we've nailed that. This gets a little crazy, you know, with the language for SDB and doing rail banking and abandonment. But understand, we're preserving the rights to all of that. We would not cede that.
Andy Joe. I'm hearing the words assume and understand. Is there any reason not to put that language somewhere?
Yeah, on the advice of our rail banking attorney.
What would it be? Why did you say that?
She said that we need to, she referenced it in this agreement so that you have the right in case someone would come back later on and say, well, you never referenced it, you never intended to do this, you never wanted to reserve your right. And so we took her legal advice. She's an expert in this field.
I want to say that I think there are a lot of people in the community that want assurance that if sometime in the future this were to make sense to be that this section be restored for rail with trail. And I know there are constraints and there are concerns about that. But there is no language to indicate that. And years down the road, what people will go by is what it says in this MOA.
No, it's going to be the modified easement that we attempt to get working on once we get through this process.
Does the STB only rail bank for freight, or do they rail bank for all types of rail service?
They don't rail bank for tourism. In fact, if you rail bank, it's usually done under freight. I mean, that's again, think about passenger service. Unless passenger service really is transit, it has a regular schedule, it has an authority that's supporting it, you know that the subsidies that are implicit in transit these days, required for transit, if you ran a train like once a day up and down the reservoir, that's not passenger, it would really come under excursion. So the way to go is with freight. And it allows you to do passenger as well.
I don't know why we're limiting ourselves to the word freight. Why don't we just say rail service?
We're not limiting ourselves in our agreement or in our easement.
But it is stated in our agreement, says freight.
It's only that is only related to a potential rail banking with the STB. The audience for that is only the STB. So that they don't say, well, you want to reactivate this line, you can't do so because you didn't withhold your rights for freight. So we talked to Andrea Furster.
Why don't we withhold our rights for rail? They might want to build 3,000 houses at Highmount and commute to Kingston.
That's the purpose of it.
We retain our right to do that.
Rail. That's the purpose of referencing freight in here, is to retain our rights for rail.
Whether the word freight is on the rail banking expert's suggestion, not because I don't know.
When you start enumerating something in a law, everything else becomes an exception.
This is a whereas, which is a recital, which isn't even the basis of the agreement. It's in there merely to support our option for the future. Let's say we have the scenario that you described. We have 3,000 units at High Mount. There's a reason to run passenger service. Whether or not we rail bank, under the modified easement, if we saw a real demand for transit there, for passenger service, at any time, we can say to the city, we're going to transition this back to railroad. We're going to give up trail use because they don't want rail with trail going at the same time. They've made that very clear. So it's our choice, which we do. If those 3,000 units come to fruition, there really is a demand and there's an economic model that supports that, we could restore that. Nothing in this precludes us from doing that.
Down the road, somewhere along the line, someone says, well, you denoted that corridor for freight.
And
does that not preclude passengers?
But understand, we have the attorney who's most experienced in rail banking in the country. She was the counsel for the Rails to Trails Conservancy. Everybody that we called said, this is the person that you want to talk to.
So again, is this because freight has the highest hierarchy or the most expansive?
No. The reason we mention freight is it's a conduit for reactivating the line if we choose to go down that route.
We didn't choose the word freight arbitrarily. The word freight is something that you'll find in, you know, in the rail banking rules and regulations. So that's why we wanted to make sure we referenced it.
And just understand, it doesn't cede our rights to do the other stuff.
So you could do an excursion, you could do a transit.
Yes. Yes. But you give up the trail here. That's the choice.
So, all right, let's go to the next question. The party shall modify the existing rail easement or establish an alternative property interest. Please explain the difference between the two and the benefit of one over the other.
Tracy, this was your question. Mm-hmm. So understand a modified easement would take the existing railroad easement and add a trail easement to it. However, one of the things we discussed is rather than trying to modify that, we also wanted to leave ourselves the option of having a separate easement that gives us trail use conditioned on us not running railroad at the same time. So that's the other property interest. So it might be a new trail easement that's associated with the existing railroad easement. Again, the pivotal point here is neither of these avenues in any way diminishes our right to rail in the future.
And we wanted to keep all of our options open as we went down this road. That was really important.
Okay.
Please explain how the interaction between the DEP and the CWC works. How is the monetary figure arrived at?
So the DEP has provided the funding for the CWC's future fund. And the DEP has a position on that and a vote. Ulster County also has two representatives on that. The figure was an amount that was deemed as a reasonable amount that would help with enhancements to the trail. Again, there are things that we would do on this trail if we have additional dollars. Do we need that to open it? No. But we could do a lot of enhancements in terms of beautification, in terms of amenities, in terms of benches, perhaps drinking water fountains. Again, we haven't done the entire planning process to identify what the communities want. But again, depending on what money is available, this million is not essential to building the trail itself.
Right.
It would be helpful to add to things that the communities might want. Additional kiosks, interpretive signage, art, public art.
Can I ask a follow-on question? I guess what I was trying to understand, and I got some of it over the years, not just now, from one of our members, who's Rich Perry. But if CWC's money is coming from DEP, what struck me as a little strange, although it's fine in terms of the MOA, it's great that the MOA is saying that they're going to advocate for us, but they're going to advocate for us CWC's board to vote to give us $1 million that they're giving to CWC. So it seems like a strange circular thing. I mean, not
seems like
not
they might have some influence there, huh?
But it also seems like why not just give us the additional $1 million? I know that sounds ridiculous to say it too, but if that's what they're saying, why wouldn't they just be in good faith give us the other million?
Those,
why does it have to go through CWC?
The $2.5 million is coming out of a different fund than the money that they put into the CWC.
But isn't $1 million a $1 million? I mean,
no, this is not a guarantee of $1 million.
Right.
Understand what this is. This is like icing on the cake.
Right.
The cake is the $2.5 million with the other $2 million from the state that builds the trail. The additional $1 million are really, you know, enhancements. And it may not be the full million. I mean, if we apply, let's say they open another grant round and we can make the case that we can stimulate business by spending $200,000 to make connections to some of the areas where there are businesses along 28A. That might be something that they're willing to fund. DEP is saying you would have our support on that.
And we understand that the autonomy of the CWC, we understand they make their own decisions. We have a part in it. We know there are two members from the county of Ulster, but the fact was, we wanted to nail the DEP down and say, if in fact we do go that route, will you help us?
And they said yes.
Okay. And just,
hold on, John.
Chairman,
hold on.
Just to clarify, they've supported other grants. We got a $330,000 water quality improvement program grant through DEC. They wrote a really strong letter of support on that, and they really, you know, they have a lot of influence with all agencies up here.
Right.
John,
if they take this money out of this, money for the future, that could deplete it for other Ulster County communities that want to use it for economic development. I mean, they donate the money, they give the money to the CWC rather than just, you know, it seems like a little convoluted way of trying to extend their influence, or maybe they're not interested in too much economic development in our area, and this is a nice way to deplete a fund.
Okay. John, I think there is an independent board that oversees that CWC fund. If we can't make a good case to them that there's a business argument for the businesses up there, that whatever we're proposing would be beneficial, then we don't deserve to get the money. I'm saying I don't need this money to get the trail. I'd like to get it for enhancements.
Okay.
Thanks. If we don't get the $1 million from CWC, where do we expect that the money to fix Butternut Cove culvert comes from?
We have the Butternut culvert is estimated to cost about $1.1 million. Originally we thought it was going to be $400,000 because it was just a replacement of the outflow wing walls and the stabilization. Barton and LaJudas went in and they looked at it, and it's a concrete arch, quite substantial, carries a lot of embankment, and it's actually torquing in the middle. It looks like it's going like this, and they have now proposed the full replacement of it. We have $330,000 pending. I've just applied for another $93,000 to do engineering and design of that through the Ashokan Stream Management Program. So our gap is somewhere $600,000 to $700,000. We will do private fundraising on that. We will go for a CFA grant, and we could also go, we would go back to the governor's office. And the governor's office has already committed $2 million to the project. The other thing to keep in mind is if we're phasing the project, it gives us time to go and capture these other funds for it. The first phase that we would build is very likely from Basin Road or the Woodstock Dyke to Ashokan Jones yes. Cove. Because that's where the least constraints
right.
are.
Yeah, the least problem is the least expensive.
Right. Right. And that standalone trail, that 6 miles alone, you know, as you all who walked it saw, that's a significant rail trail. That's more than Hudson Valley Rail Trail has, which only has 3.5 miles. Right? We're extending your trail, though, thanks to your resolution group.
That's where that other million's going.
Thank you. All right. We didn't hit up scenic Hudson for that other million. No.
The trail requires that DEP have final approval of the final design of the trail. The paragraph talks about mutual agreement. Right? Did you get this one?
No.
Input from the county as to the portion of the project to be constructed by the city. It reads that we are mutually agreeing upon the location of the additional trail support amenities, not the trailheads themselves. I want to confirm that this is acceptable to the county.
Confirmed. Trailheads and amenities are subject to mutual agreement.
Okay.
And actually, those of you who saw Ashokan we agree with DEP. We haven't done the full planning process, but that's pretty obviously going to be our midpoint trailhead. There's a lot of available space. It's flat. It's right on the corridor. It's near adjacent businesses that are just
at
up the road. Yeah.
You know, one of the things, and I think this might have been part of Tracy's question, that I think it remains unanswered, and I don't want to be presumptuous and say that, but the city obligations have, a mutual agreement on X, Y, or Z, but the county obligation, which is to build, design, and operate the trail, is... has a final decision by the DEP. The DEP has final sign-off. It's not a mutual agreement at the end. Is there a certain reason?
Well, we have a final sign-off, too.
Yeah.
If we don't sign off on the design, we don't build it. So they're the equivalent. It's six and one half dozen of the other. The other thing I want to highlight is that, I don't know. I'll leave it there. Yeah.
I think this next question we went over, but if you want to go through it, this referring to the land use permit or a modified easement.
Can we skip that one?
Who will determine where the fencing and guardrails go? Do we have an estimate of quantity and cost?
Again, like any of the details on the trail, like the surface, the amenities, the signage, the fencing, the safety things, all of that is subject to the planning process. And I will go back. What I was going to say about the trailheads is this. We made clear to DEP that we didn't want to predetermine where anything was or what anything was, other than a few things that they really needed, like they don't want impervious surfaces. We left the location of the trailheads up to the planning process because we wanted to hear from the town of Olive, we wanted to hear from the other local communities, we wanted to hear from the area businesses, I wanted to hear from the running clubs and the bicyclists or, anybody who would use this trail, where would you want to access it? And so we figure out our major access points, and then we also built in the ability to do informal access points. So if you live across from the trail, and the access point is a mile and a half down, you don't have to go the full mile and a half. And we would try to probably formalize a lot of the gates and the logging roads that currently exist.
Would the DEP be afforded all rights of an involved agency during an environmental review of additional areas of the UND corridor in the New York City watershed by right, or is it something that the MOA is granting?
The MOA doesn't grant them anything that they wouldn't already have. They would be a permitting agency for any work that we do in the watershed.
Please define all the areas of the UND corridor that are in the watershed.
The watershed begins at Basin Road, goes all the way up to High Mount. So 28.5 miles of our corridor are in New York City's watershed. The area outside the watershed is from Kingston to Basin Road.
Is the county responsible for obtaining all the permits for trailhead work? Section C of the city's responsibility fails to address obtaining any required federal, state, or local permits and approvals for design, construction, operation, and maintenance of the trailheads as addressed in the section of the rail trail.
DEP will be responsible for any permits. Right now, I don't know that there would be any permits on that because for the trailheads, because those areas are already, like the Woodstock Dyke already exists and has parking. We are responsible for including that in our seeker review.
But is there a reason that the MOA, because the MOA says that we're responsible for obtaining all required state, federal, local permits for our responsibilities for the rail trail itself, why wouldn't we want the MOA to state that they're responsible for the trailheads? Because it doesn't explicitly state.
We really envisioned that most of the permits were going to be for the trail because we're along water bodies. We're going to be disturbing a lot more land than they are. Our disturbance for the total corridor is going to exceed certain thresholds that require water permits.
But might they not need a local permit depending on what kind of parking they do?
They would do that. I mean, they're responsible for the construction.
I guess I just wonder why sometimes the language isn't mirrored. Like I appreciate, and that's kind of what Ken was clarifying in my previous question, that when it's to us it says mutually agreed upon, and when it's to them it says final approval. And the answer is the same thing. When it's to us, it says we will obtain all the requirements. And when it's to them, it says we say, well, we know they're going to do it if they need it.
Well, it's their property. They'll be using their acquiring property. Ours is the easement. That's our property per se, because we have the easement. We have the right to be on it. And clearly, we want to be the ones to be responsible for obtaining our own permits.
I wasn't questioning us obtaining our own permits. It's the distinction between the two and just making sure that.
Okay.
But
the next question, is this a typo? And answer is it's not.
We went back and looked at it, Tracy. It was intended to read reopening or
Okay. The city reserves the right to comment on such submission to ensure that any action by the STP is consistent with the purposes of this agreement. Chokan Trail, and in particular development and operation of the Chokan Trail in an environmentally sensitive manner. Clearly, the city has a right to comment on any STB action. How might an action of the STB be inconsistent with the purposes of this agreement?
This provision basically came about so that the city was protected from us going around their back and saying, hey, we're going to go rail bank and get a notice of interim trail use, which allows us trail use as long as you pull up the rail, and then that we were going to do something that was inconsistent with the protection of their drinking water quality. For instance, if we went to the STB and we got rail banking and we said, we don't want your money, we're going to develop what we want, we're going to put pervious pavement, we're going to allow horses, we are going to have motorized vehicles run up and down this. They wanted to protect themselves from an unregulated trail on the border of their terminal reservoir.
Section 3 of the agreement, same issue with specifying freight. I think we can skip over the freight issue again, or is that something people want to talk about some more?
That's the same question.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
That was number 2.
5 years was negotiated. Okay, why 5 years? Why can there be an automatic extension?
So the MOA establishes a process and conditions for the fee for what will be a land use permit. Think of the land use permit as the bridge to get us funding, start planning, and start doing the other agreements that we need, like the security agreement, as we work towards the modified easement. So the modified easement outlives both the land use permit and it contains the same conditions. So, you know, again, anything that's in Exhibit B would end up in that modified easement.
So page 8, effective date and term. This section is of great concern to me. The county has a perpetual easement over city land for rail use. The city has recognized the fact. 2000 letter from Bill Tobin. I'd love to see that, whoever has that. I don't know what you're talking about, but we would have a perpetual easement. Would we have a perpetual easement for trail activities? That's the purpose. That is the goal,
yes.
Okay?
That's
the goal, okay? So, you know, that's the goal, and we're trying to get there, you know, through a path that gets us there, and that gets us there so that we don't lose any time, you know, so that we don't back and forth with the city of New York. And we have to go through various different boards there before we even get to the city council to get the modified easement, which then go up to the city council and the mayor. So it's a convoluted process, but it is their process.
Can I just ask, in your discussions with the city, I mean, this may be self-evident, but has that been part of the discussion, the idea of an easement in perpetuity for the trail?
Yes.
Okay, well,
and again, that
hasn't been said. That's
that easement for trail is conditioned upon not running railroad at the same time.
I know.
And again, the concern there is the doubling of the width of the corridor in most of the areas where it's single track.
Thank you.
Can you explain, you know, you've talked about how things can be engineered. Can you explain, first of all, is there anything specifically in the MOA, not the resolution, which references a supposed preference on the part of DEP for rail only or trail only? Is there anything in the MOA?
I mean, the fact that they're giving us $2.5 million and they're not saying, oh, you could use it for rail or trail. They're giving us $2.5 million for trail development. That trail development is predicated on us not running railroad at the same time and converting
and
that.
Does it say that in the MOA? Because I keep trying to find that language. That's what I was trying to cite before.
It does, and there, in your questions, we actually cite it. So if you want to wait, we can get to that, and I can give you the section so that I'm not fumbling through this.
That's fine.
But we will come back to that, ma'am.
Okay. This question is about the land use permit. is Exhibit B, the land use permit referenced earlier. This is confusing.
Tracy, this is a good question.
Yeah.
This is not the land use permit. Exhibit B is the language that would be in a future land use permit that would be issued upon execution of the MOA.
But you do see how it's confusing because it says outline of land use permit.
Yes.
So I was, I assume.
We agree.
Okay.
Are there examples of operation and maintenance plans and security cooperative agreements with DEP for watershed land use, maybe for fishing or hunting use? It'd be nice to see what they all have already approved.
Fishing and hunting doesn't require maintenance agreements. It requires an access permit. There are other municipalities and there are other community groups that have trail maintenance or ballpark maintenance agreements, like the town of Neversink has ballparks that are owned. They have the ballparks. The underlying ownership is DEP. So they have a maintenance agreement with that. We have requested all of those agreements. And again, that agreement that we sign is subject to negotiations. So we don't have an agreement that we've agreed to prematurely.
This paragraph states that the county is responsible for monitoring the trail and the trailhead. Earlier it was stated that it was the city's responsibility to maintain the trailhead. What exactly does monitor mean, considering the failure to monitor could result in the termination of the permit? We need a very clear, very definition.
Monitor is to watch or keep track of, according to the Webster Dictionary. We think that has a common meaning. We expect there will be a shared responsibility between DEP and the county to monitor these areas. Again, if they feel that we aren't monitoring it, they can't unilaterally shut the trail down. They would have to send us a notice as per the agreement, and it stipulates who the notices go to, and say you're in default, you're not doing X, Y, or Z. Where that would really be an issue isn't on the monitoring side. It's what they were concerned about is if trees fall, if there's potholes in the trail, and there's an extended period of time where we're not addressing those, that's really what they're more concerned about.
Can I just ask a question? Because that's, I think, what I was talking about, though, it's talking, in that case, it's talking about the trailheads. I mean, it includes the trailheads. So when they talk about monitoring, using the definition you put here, it sounds more like it's a security issue, and since we're going to have a joint agreement.
Well, understand that the DEP has jurisdiction as far as, enforcing the laws, no matter what they are. Unfortunately, they can even stop you and give you a speeding ticket up there.
And the other reality is any ambiguity in this can be cleaned up in the security agreement and the O&M agreement. Those will both come to the legislature.
And the municipalities, if they have police departments up there, have jurisdiction as well. The state police has jurisdiction. The county sheriff has jurisdiction.
They just want to make sure that we wanted the ability to monitor the trailheads as well. We didn't want to just cede that to DEP. So if we see a situation at a trailhead that needs attention, we have the right also to take action on that. If we see people doing things that are not proper there, we can also intercede. It's not just, we'll call DEP and have them arrest them for doing whatever. 16.
The language is confusing. Does this mean that we can open the trail as we complete certain portions?
As long as we design the trail, get approval, and then construct it to the design, we can open it piece by piece. And in fact, that's probably what we'll do. 11.5 miles is a big chunk of trail to take on at one time. If you look at the Dutchess Rail Trail, they did it in 5 phases, and they have about 13 or 14 miles. And again, I think the first phase is what we all walked, some of us walked on last Saturday. Again, that's a pretty easy area to open. You've got logical termini on both sides that already have some capacity for parking and amenities.
Will the trailheads be open and maintained from dusk to dawn year-round, including sanitary facilities and plowed parking?
Yes.
How did the county get approval for special events? What is the criteria? What is the lead time? Can we include language that it will not be unreasonably withheld?
We would include language in the operation and maintenance plan. I'm sure there would be thresholds. You know, if you do an event that has 50 people versus an event that has 5,000 people, there usually are different levels of, you know, they might require extra bathrooms, they might require extra security, and all of that is fairly reasonable.
And on the other hand, when we get into those type of situations, we may be required to have our own health department involved in that as well, as we know from previous mass gatherings or events that have taken place in the county. The health department is they need to be permitted by the health department.
And we can put into the operation and maintenance plan a time frame as well. I think that's worth doing.
Is the city responsible?
Oh, I have a quick question about that. So in the previous question, you know, are the trailheads going to be open 365, you know, 24 hours? You said yes.
No, not 24 hours.
Oh, 365. But if you have a special event that may be closed to the public.
Not always. Not necessarily. No. They do events on the walkway. They do events on the Walkell Valley Rail Trail where the trail is open. I mean, the Kingston Classic, when they had the runners go down the Walkell Valley Rail Trail and up the O&W Rail Trail, they didn't close the trails.
Bike events.
Yeah, these would be events that would be technically our events. It wouldn't be the DEP coming in trying to do an event on the trail. It would be something that, you know, that the county would be.
And these would be public events, Carl. We wouldn't necessarily, like, give it to a private group to just have fun on it for the day. These would be open to the public. I think that would be one of the criteria.
Take an example of, like, a bicycle marathon or whatever. And some resident wants to walk that day. The only way they can access the trail would be on the bike.
No.
Well, they can look over.
Well, we'll make sure they have bells. That's what the Hudson Valley Rail Trail does,
that's
right?
Going to be separate
state law.
Separate requirements. Okay.
So state law.
Iron those out.
You know,
hear that, Kevin?
Just with the event thing, it's really very confusing, quite frankly. I can remember a few years ago in Phoenicia, the women in black used to walk down the street holding chairs over their heads. Pretty cool. So we decided they were going to have a permit to do it. They said, well, instead of a permit, we'll just hold tubes over our heads. Because people carrying tubes around Phoenicia all day long. So my point is, so we can decide to carry fish poles on the darn thing. Is that an event? I mean, is it a significant event? Is it the Cub Scouts meeting there to run to take their guys on a jamboree to the ballet or Pine Hill? What is it to find at?
That's why we talked about the thresholds in the operation and maintenance plan. Typically, like, if you take a bunch of Boy Scouts, and they do this on the Walkell Valley Rail Trail, you have the 8 or 10 people, you're not going to require it. If you have an organized event that's publicly advertised, there's enough people that there are concerns about sanitary facilities or security, we would define that in the operation and maintenance plan. I don't think the two people,
you know,
as long as they don't get run over by the bikers.
Just what you talked about before about the sanitary facilities, I understand that. There's an awful lot of fishermen in that place that don't have sanitary facilities.
Yeah. And so what are they doing? Are they coming to the inn?
They do.
All right. We can work this out with you, John.
All right. So we are now on the last page of Legislator Bartel's questions. Is the city responsible for trash and litter removal at trailheads, public parking facilities, sanitary facilities, additional entrance points, and other mutually agreed upon trail support amenities?
Yes. The additional entry points we would be responsible for, and we would have to work that out. So again, we're trying to figure out. We really requested those because we know a lot of people will access this without a vehicle, and that's a great way to access it. So.
Oh, no. Next one, sorry. Okay. I read ahead.
All right. Will the city notice the county of a temporary shutdown? Yes. There is a notice provision in the agreement. Yes. Section 6, the manner. Executive and I, county attorney, which is normally to be served with.
Yeah,
you
go ahead.
Could we add to the notice that the chair of the legislature?
We could. Frankly, I would prefer it just to be the county attorney because I'm always concerned that I'm not going to know about a notice and not be able to do something about it. this legislature and the staff that you have in there is excellent at making sure that I get, you know, if something gets served up there, I get it. But who could?
As an additional,
with copy too?
Yeah. I mean, if there's a way to do that, I mean, I envision a scenario where there is an executive, of course not this executive, or a county attorney, not this county attorney, who might keep the legislature in the dark about such a thing. And, you know, and that could cause some problems on our end. So I try to see those things ahead of time and fix them before we get there.
I'm sure Executive Rock would share that information.
Yes. God.
Oh, maybe not Executive Donald Trump.
It's something we can do. All right. But, you know, you understand my concern about it. It's just a legal concern. That's all. I want to make sure that if you get something comes, it's got to be responded to, you know, in the legal process.
Absolutely.
So then on the...
I just have a question, because then it begs that... this trail, which will be a world-class trail, will attract people from many states. So is there going to be a public notice that the trail is closed for a certain time? Because what if you have people coming from halfway across the country, bring their bikes, especially here, you know, spend money in our hotels, and then the trail is closed for 2 weeks?
The Mid-Hudson Trail. I mean, we would have a big sign with directions to the Boyceville Inn.
Well, you know, obviously, you know, on the county tourism website.
No, I'm sure we would put
question.
That up.
It
is really.
I've done that many a times. Go to a destination, not Wally World, but right. The destination. No, it was closed.
This leads us to later on, when we build this, we want to make sure we market it effectively. We might want to have a page on the website. You know, we have this great Rec Connect program, but we want to get this out to the maximum people. And people don't come back. If you close a trail and they come some distance and it's closed, that you may lose them in the future. So. And I've done that with the walkway over the Hudson and been frustrated. You go to the walkway and the gate's closed because there's ice on the bridge or whatever.
Stop and get the key or give it to you.
Oh, I just climbed the fence.
What is the estimate of cost of insurance policy like this? The county has insurance policies. There's no expectation that they're going to increase at this present time. Understand insurance is actuarial. So if we had a lot of, a lot of accidents and we had a lot of claims, whether it be this or from other department or entity in the county, then your insurance could possibly go up. But we're not anticipating that that's going to happen.
There's a lot more liability in the pool.
Daily, you know, slip and fall. People get hurt. They name the county. We deal with them as we would. We would deal with this as we would any other claim against the county or any other action against the county. You know, we would defend we have insurance. That's what we have insurance for.
Does this insurance policy include the trailheads, parking, et cetera? Does the county need to be named on the city's insurance for those issues?
It doesn't include the trailheads, and in all of our dealings with the city, we have never been named on their insurance policies, and we have we have a mutual indemnification clause. So.
But then why are they asking to be named on ours? I mean, it seems, again, like a...
Because the easement is on their property, and so the issue of us being on their property, whether it's on the easement or accessing their property from the easement, is of a concern to them.
Their trailheads aren't on our property. Their trailheads are on their property.
We don't own property, Chris. We own the right to deserve some
correct.
Property.
Correct.
So
thank
you.
We're going to fandango again here, huh?
But there's just some language there, and I just want to make it very clear. Do not own any land. We have the right to cross over the property, and that's what we're doing.
Okay. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Thank you.
Go.
Sing your praises, Erica.
Can I just, there's no, in terms of us being named as additionally insured on theirs for the parking and trailhead?
No,
is it not possible, or is it not?
I would tell you it's not possible. They're not willing to do that.
The insurance companies wouldn't insure them. And can I just say, the insurance companies would not insure because we don't own. They'll only right. You can't get insurance.
Tracy, we're almost done with your. Right.
What might this do to additional conditions? What might this do?
Okay.
Do we have the right to agree? Do we have the right to see conditions before they're imposed?
they wouldn't just unilaterally impose a condition. They would notify us of the issue that is either causing a public safety or a water supply concern. We would have time to cure that defect. For instance, let's say they said that we weren't maintaining a culvert and it was a sending sediment down into the Ashokan. Again, if we didn't cure it for a long period of time, they would then try to impose something like a new standard on culvert. But if we address these things, this really is not an issue.
That sounds like a notice to cure like an existing problem. But this reads to me like they're saying they can impose additional conditions. I mean, it is what it says, as they see necessary. Based on modifications in the future and based on their operational experience. So I'm just saying it strikes me that it should also say that we will be at least afforded a notice of what changes they're proposing so that we could have a discussion about it. Because it's one thing if what they're saying is you're allowing sediment to go into the reservoir. It's another that they say, well, based on the way you've done this, we now are requiring that the whole rail trail be fenced.
We can add that as we develop the modified easement. Because, again, the land use permit, the reality is...
it's temporary.
Right.
I got it. And but I would request that you think about that and think about,
sure,
in terms of the next step. That,
that there be a notification process, there be an appeal process.
Appeal process, exactly. A way to sit down and discuss it. Because this is pretty open. I mean, this is pretty open-ended. It's basically saying they can modify.
But it also has to be consistent with their rules, and we reference that in the addition.
and it also...
We've looked at the rules. I don't have them with me here today.
But I have their rules, and their rules are... I mean, it's pretty... It's in their favor.
Of course it is.
It's pretty broad, and as you said the other day, I respect it. It's the drinking supply of quite a lot of people. I mean, I'm clear on that, but I still think that we should be involved in the process of new impositions on the corridor, that it shouldn't be a unilateral, okay, we get a notice and here it is and now you have to do this.
And we did include language saying that they cannot unreasonably interfere with the use of the trail by the public. So if they had a thing that said, well, now you can't go here, and we have a defense saying, well, it's unreasonably interfering with the use of the trail. This was mostly envisioned as things, once you open the trail, we might not have envisioned everything that we need. And the issue really was one of fencing. They're worried about people swimming in the reservoir. So if there's an area where they're swimming and people are swimming, we would want to address that as well, because that is that's an issue for us.
Yeah, they scare the fish.
Yes, it's kind of the fish.
Chairman has a question.
Maybe the bears.
Chris, any application for permits, those sort of things, are there going to be estimates for participation on the trail usage? Is that part of the permit process? Or do we estimate 1,000 a week, 5,000 a month?
The permit for special events, or
to build
that would be included in our secret review, and that's why they wanted us to not only look at this section but also factor in what other trails might connect to this, because they want to have an idea of what the usage is. And again, why that's relevant.
In particular, though, in this property, we're talking about this now.
Correct.
Well, that's part of the
yes.
And
because we have to anticipate, things like. What is the capacity of the sanitary facilities that you put there? If you don't put enough, that's an environmental issue.
Will anyone be monitoring what is completed to see if there was some accurate estimates of?
I know we would want to do trail counts. I mean, most of the trails around here now are doing an annual trail count, and then they extrapolate what the use is. So, again. One of the things in your packet, I think it's Appendix B, is a letter from the New York New Jersey Trail Conference, and they also help to monitor the trail, and they also help to do estimates on trail use. And that generates, I mean, we may want to improve the amenities if we know we're getting a certain level of use.
Well, it's always nice to have accountability, that's all.
I agree.
All right, well, now we are on to Vice Chairman Donaldson.
And a lot of these have already been asked, so we will go faster as we get further into the packet.
And so this started out as a frequently asked questions document that was produced by the planning department in our office. And so now we're at the stage where we are into the second stage where comments were made by Chairman Donaldson on those questions and he wants responses. So what I'd like to do is just start with the blue.
The comment.
Yep. Okay? And I think we've addressed it. The agreement can be canceled on a 120-day notice and the trails can at any time be closed by the DEP. And unless anyone wants to go into that further.
I do. You say that the termination terms are consistent with other agreements. What about the 1911 agreement? Can that be canceled in 120 days?
No.
That's an easement.
That's a
different. Our easement might be able to be canceled in 120 days.
It's a legal document that the parties have agreed to that gives the county, gave the railroad,
will you help us?
The right to cross over their property. It's perpetual. It lasts forever unless the county and the city sit down and decide we want to extinguish it or we want to change
yeah.
it or we
okay.
want to modify it. Okay.
And we have we generally have an escape clause like this of 60 or 90 days in a lot of the other contracts that we do.
You know, this was put in, the 120-day notice was put in for our protection as well as theirs because we wanted to be in a position, the policy unwritten of this county legislature, as long as I have been here, is that there be an ability to have an escape clause for an ability to terminate an agreement or a contract without having to say there's been breach or have a reason for, you know, it's an at-will. We want out. Time for us, we want out, and that's it. So that's the reason for we put that language in there. Right?
And the risk really, again, falls on them. Let's say we design this, we spend $300,000 on the design, they pull out with 120 days notice. There's no stipulation that we pay back the money that we have spent on planning. In fact, there's a provision here, if we haven't drawn down the money and we still have obligations pending, they have to reimburse us for that. So when I discussed this with the DEP, they thought, you know, that's more risky to them.
I don't understand why an MOA can be canceled in 120 days and an easement can't. That's my question.
Okay, because the easement does not provide in its body that can happen. It clearly states that this is a perpetual easement, and the only way is to
help me out here.
It's like a deed to your property.
Yes, that's a good, perfect analogy.
Perfect.
Thank you. It's like the deed to your property. Okay.
Anytime.
It is a deed.
Yes,
it's a deed. It gets recorded. That agreement is a recorded document in the Ulster County Clerk's office. It's essentially like so they've given up a certain property right. They've given a property right to the county. First, to cross over, it's a right of way, and it runs with the easement can be vanquished or terminated. It's either so it runs as long as the land is there, that easement will stay. That's how those things run. And this is a contract, and the easement is a property right. You don't own it, but you have a right to cross over property. Does that help?
Very helpful. Thank you.
Does that help you, Amanda?
I don't necessarily see a 120-day termination as protective of the county.
In respect for this contract that we have here? Okay. All right.
We don't have numbers on this one, so we're...
All right. The MOA limits the trail surface to dirt, gravel, or crushed stone. Asphalt is not allowed. This means no high-speed bicycles.
I'm not going to touch the irony of this, but we can use any trail surface that is not deemed impervious. Impervious is defined in the watershed regulations. It allows for use of gravel, for dirt, for crushed stone, for pervious materials like pervious pavement. And you may know, I mean, Rich Parody and I had dialogue about this last night. There's nothing to preclude us from paving this if you want to spend the extra money to invest in permeable pavement. However, there's a flip side to that because a lot of trail users, you can you can build a well-surfaced, stable, firm pathway that accommodates most bicycles, all but like the most narrow road tires. I mean, and a lot of the people, one of the questions that comes up later is, who would ride from the walkway to the Ashokan if high-speed bicycles aren't allowed? That path includes about 14 miles of the Walkill Valley Rail Trail that's not paved, and in fact is a much less well-surfaced trail than this would be. So again, if you look at who's doing touring, you look at who's doing a lot of these bike events, they're doing them on mountain bikes, trail bikes, hybrids, and then adapted road bikes that have a little bit wider tire. We expect that any of these surfaces that we choose, we want to be ADA compliant, we want to be available for strollers, we want to be able to have the full range of people that would use them, kids, bikes, and again, it's in. I frankly think a lot of these natural materials are more environmentally sustainable, and they're also a lot easier to maintain. As we found out with the Town of Lloyd's Trail, the old piece that they've paved is now cracking. It's going to be very expensive to replace. That's not something you can do with volunteer forces. When you have a stone dust trail, that's a lot easier for volunteers to take care of. It's a lot cheaper to do the maintenance on it. It also is a nice trail if you run. I'm a runner, and I would not like it if they paved the Walkill Valley Rail Trail. And I think a lot of people felt that about the Dutchess Rail Trail. In fact, they asked for an unpaved shoulder next to it so that they could run on a softer surface.
I think we've covered the next question. This is about the $25 million and how will it... Unless anybody's got any further questions about that. The next comment, there is no guarantee in the MOA that the CWA grant will be funded. I think we covered that also.
That's true.
Okay. Trailhead locations are undetermined and controlled by the DEP, which will determine parking spaces and number of users. I think we should address that.
We did address it.
You did? Okay. No funds are committed to joint
Tracy,
marketing.
Stop, or stop. Either of you stop Anybody if you stop. Feel like we haven't addressed that.
Okay. No funds are committed to joint marketing. So they have promised that they will, you know, advise their customers and their regular water bills. There are other avenues that we could help, you know, determine how to reach out to households. We've had some discussions, but nothing, you know, that's something we're going to get into later on as we go through our other agreements.
Bus advertising.
Subway advertising. Bicycle and pedestrian improvements are only referenced as a consideration of a possible shared use lane.
So that specifically goes to Section 1, Paragraph D, and that states the city shall accommodate bicycle and pedestrian traffic, and that's for the Dividing Weir and the Five Arch Bridge, including consideration of a dedicated bike lane. And what we wanted to do was leave ourselves the flexibility in design to either, we're having the same discussion down in New Paltz with the replacement of the bridge over the Walkill. Sometimes it's better to have a dedicated share use lane on these bikes, and sometimes it's better to have two widened shoulders that can be maintained more easily. So again, we didn't want to prejudge the outcome. DEP is committed to the connectivity of this trail with the southern part of the reservoir. We've talked about, again, this is another piece of the puzzle to have connectivity for safe biking and pedestrian access, circumnavigating and going through the middle of the Ashokan Reservoir.
I have a question. Some of the constraints we saw.
I think that's on.
I guess. Some of the constraints that we saw along the trail were determined basically by a 14, and you needed a 14-inch span. On the bridges?
14-foot span.
14-foot, yes.
This is on, yeah.
And $25 million.
This one might be low.
I like this $25 million.
But on the weir, is there going to be, there's not going to be 14-foot or, you know.
That's going to be subject to design. Oftentimes when you do a dedicated lane, it's 10 feet in width. When you do widened shoulders, like what we've looked at on the New Paltz Bridge, Dennis, correct me, 4 to 6?
4 foot.
4 foot.
Some other instances.
It's what?
Four 4 foot on each side, or sometimes 6 feet on each side. We're also doing, again, we had the same discussion with North Putt Corners Road in New Paltz, where people wanted a dedicated lane, but then they realized, well, what do you do with a dedicated lane because it doesn't get plowed in the winter? And what we ended up doing is a quite a widened shoulder that can safely accommodate kids on bikes and pedestrians.
In the winter?
Yeah, because it gets...
Kids on bikes, that's pretty dangerous.
They walk to school there.
They walk to school there. I mean, again, that high school is...
I know. But,
they're doing it now.
So there will be sections of the trail that will be less than the 14-foot that was considered...
This doesn't say that. I mean, there will be... If there are constraints identified through the planning process, like there's a rock cut that's narrow and we can't accommodate the drainage that's necessary and the trail, you're according to ASHTO standards, which are the standards we're going to try to build this to, you can narrow the trail for small amounts of that trail.
Okay.
Our goal is not to do that, to avoid that to the extent possible. We would like a 10 to 12 foot trail with sufficient, I mean, where we have 16 feet, we would like a 12 foot trail. When we do the Hudson Valley Rail Trail, we're building a width of trail, 12 feet on the trail with shoulders and drainage.
We've gone over this many, many times, but if anybody has any further questions, once the rails are removed, the easement will be vulnerable to cancellation. We have the perpetual easement. We've been down this road. If you've got any questions,
I have a
question. What about the rest of the corridor? I mean, are we susceptible to losing easements on the rest of the corridor?
No, this has nothing to do with the rest of the corridor. It's only with our right to use the property in the easement on the land that's owned by the Department.
But if we're connecting other parts of the corridor that are not part of the easement, are we susceptible to loss of easements in other parts of the corridor?
No. According to if we rail bank, we have to have access, but we don't have to have access to the entire line, okay? There has to be access to the line that we are rail banking, okay? So we could effectively rail bank this piece of property as well as the rest of the corridor, which is what we intend to do at some point, okay? But so we're not in a position where by making this a trail only that we're going to lose our right to access the other 38, the remaining 38 acres, okay?
So it doesn't leave us
file. Thank you.
They're different types of easements and different types of the in different parts of the corridor.
I understand.
West of
Boyceville,
we don't have as many concerns.
Cut off either.
Correct.
Right.
Right.
The whole
right.
point
right.
of this is that
interconnected.
I just want to understand this, and this is a question for Chris. One option is the rail bank. And within that option would be to take the ties and the rails out. What are the other options?
For instance?
On this section, we have an option not to rail bank and simply protect the rail easement and allow interim trail use through the modified easement. We don't need rail banking to do that here.
So you just cover the rails with the surface?
The rails would be removed. The issue there is if you don't remove the ties, firstly, DEP is going to object. They want the ties out of the watershed, and we want the ties out of the watershed. And the other thing is if you try to cover it, you're basically adding a lot of fill that we otherwise wouldn't need to bring in, and then you have to extend the top of the... Like the geometry of these high fill areas, you can't just pile stuff on the rail. I know there's a question in Manna's questions later on, like why don't you just fill between the gauge of the track? That's not a modern trail that meets any standards. You wouldn't, you know, like the trail that was built in Kingston out to Kingston Point is lovely, but it's not a multi-use trail that's up to ASHTO standards. You can't bike on that because it's too narrow.
All right.
Yeah.
You're not going to like this question. It's actually a statement because
is this copyrighted?
No, you've already spent a lot of time for a rail embankment lawyer. What do you call her?
Rail banking lawyer.
When and specific language in the MOA to protect the rail, to protect our easement, to protect
physical
protect the easement perpetually.
Correct.
Okay, and using rail as the
freight
as the purpose, when really we don't have any intention of ever wanting to bring rail back in there.
Well,
I don't know that, but I mean, if you take the rails out, then you know you're starting from zero.
Yeah, again, that's how rail banking works across the country. Again, the 700 or so corridors. Understand why the Trails System Act and rail banking were created. When we started spinning off parts of the system, and again, we can have a whole debate about whether that was a good choice from a public policy perspective. I would probably be one of the people that said no. But we did. And these lines were abandoned rapidly through the 60s, 70s. Even now, these lines are being rapidly abandoned in areas of the country. What happened was the problem that we had like in Lloyd, where that old corridor went up for sale and the municipality got part of it. They needed part of it, I think, for drainage. But the other part of it, they didn't buy. And it got sold off to private interests.
They didn't have the option because once you lose your rail easement, the property owner has first dibs on it.
But that's not how that went. That was abandoned and sold by the railroad. That's what this staves off. Well, fortunately, the integrity of this corridor remains, whereas the integrity of the O&W, as Lynn will tell you, we've got an O&W that could be 31 miles from Kingston to Ellenville, and we've got a 2.5-mile gap in it that's owned by four or five people who bought it when the town of Rochester decided not to buy the rest of that trail. That's what the Trail System Act and rail banking do. It allows for a trail, but with the thought that someday we may come to our senses and have a national rail system again. And you want to, without the corridors, you can't do that. You're not going to run a rail up 28 because of the slopes. All of these corridors are really valuable because they run through built places like hamlets and cities and you know cores of towns, and they're mostly flat. They're like, you know, 1 to 5% grade in most cases. Right. So again, keep it in the context, like you're banking this for the future. It doesn't mean that you're going to use it, but you're protecting the integrity of the corridor. That's the value here.
So we'll always have the easement, always have the right-of-way,
right.
Even if the DEP deems it necessary to close off that section on their property for safety reasons.
Correct.
But we won't be able to use it.
For trail.
For trail. And the only other way we'd be able to use it is a national rail line or something. A freight rail.
Well, that's the purpose.
That's
of
the only day, right? Which wouldn't really benefit Ulster County, but I mean that's the only.
No, I mean if you brought it, you could reactivate it for passenger rail as well. But again, passenger is a lot harder than freight.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand it.
Yeah. These are really good questions. I understand what you're asking us. Took a lot of hours of research and conversations for us to understand. So. We want you to understand this and feel comfortable with it because it's complicated. Railroad law is very complicated, and going back and looking at the records of how these things got disposed of is amazing.
Yeah, I'm done. All right.
Thanks.
I figured if I just kept talking, Carl, you'd give up.
May I?
Go ahead. You could have thrown me a softball right here.
So. Another option would be to leave the railroad, the rail in place, the physical structure in place, and build the trail where there is room adjacent to it.
No, that is not allowed in this agreement.
I know it's not allowed in this agreement, and that's one of my concerns about the agreement.
Okay.
But it would have been an option.
It's not an option. I mean, you don't have the room to build a trail. You and I walked last week, and we saw sections where you only have 12 feet on a high fill, or you only have 14 feet in a rock cut.
Yeah,
and the rail, hold on, please. the railroad is right in the center. It's not like we can just squish the rail over to the right a little bit or over to the left and then build a trail. We can't build a trail with the necessary setbacks, drainage, and safety concerns on most of that area. So let's say the DEP was saying, we're happy for you to build a railroad trail. Go at it. There are a lot of sections here where you just can't do it. And the fact is, the expense of it would be incredible, man. I mean, you saw the rock cuts that you would have to contend with. You saw the areas of high fill are even more concerning. And every culvert below those high fills would have to be extended. I know how much that is for the Butternut Cove, and it's really expensive. I mean, you would have to... I would also look at it from an environmental perspective, because I know that's important to you. If you had to widen that trail, you would be taking down a tremendous amount of trees. You would be moving a lot of rock. You would be contending with filling wetlands. I'm not clear that you would ever permit that on a drinking water source.
From my experience walking the trail this past weekend, there were large sections where you had your 14 feet, and there were other sections that were constrained. In those constrained sections, there are alternatives for how that can be handled. Just as where there's a weir or a trestle, there are adjustments that can be made. And there are places where the trail could overlap the track where it's necessary.
We may also not have the legal right to go further and expand the easement, which is something...
And there are two things to keep in mind. 14 feet is not an unconstrained area. That's barely enough for a trail. What you really need for a trail is that 14 feet plus the setback, plus the surface of the trail, plus the drainage. So you're talking more in the neighborhood of probably 25, 27, 28 feet minimum. So when you look at those 14-foot areas, those are constrained areas. The other thing to think about is the cost of doing that. We have, earlier on, we were talking about the budget and the available funds. We have a responsibility to be efficient with the funds that we have. We know, like in the area between Kingston and Hurley Mountain Road, that trying to accommodate rail with trail raised the cost of doing just that little leg by a factor of 4 to 5 times. I'm getting a hard time now about whether or not we have enough money for this trail. To propose that we would add all kinds of fill and retaining walls and rock cuts and workarounds and sistered pathways on bridges, extensions of culverts, it's clear to me that that project would never, ever be funded or approved. And understand that most of the private funding sources are interested in funding trail. Now, some have said, oh, there's a lot of money for railroad grants out here. That's for active freight lines. And there's not a big pot of money in New York State. The railroad has applied for those 2 years running. There's no money that has come forth on that. And again, you have to figure out what you can do with the resources you have.
Well, I'm just looking back at the last season and seeing how an unused stretch, or a stretch that was used very, very little and gradually has been improved, and I'm talking about the Kingston to Hurley Mountain Road stretch, has ended up being a huge boon to the economy. So,
I think we're going to have to agree to disagree if we're going to get through this.
Yeah.
I would be glad to
just finish my sentence, because it's an important point, and that is that if you extrapolate what happened last year to other sections of the rail, especially the very beautiful section along the Ashokan, I think that the economic development potential is huge. And I think that we're, by taking this route, we're really depriving the county of an option. Whereas, if this other option of building a trail near the rail and on the rail where it was absolutely necessary were to be considered, I think we would be preserving all options far better than rail banking.
Yeah, Amanda, we respect your opinion. I'd like to just try to keep this to the MOA if we could, so we're conveying information. I don't think we'll solve the debate here tonight.
We're not here to provide you with information.
Where are we on this thing here?
Maintenance costs are unknown.
Oh, this is a good one.
Yeah.
Some of you heard this last night in the committee. The maintenance costs, we estimate, without any volunteers, would run between $11,500 a year and $23,000 a year for the section that we're talking about. If you look at Appendix A, that has a letter from the Rails to Trails Conservancy that's at the back of your packet. They just surveyed 200 rail trails across the northern United States, which experienced four seasons like us. They found that the average for a non-asphalt trail was $1,006 per mile per year, $1,900 and change for an asphalt trail. I didn't want to just simply rely on that, so I also went to the Marbletown O&W Rail Trail Association and asked what they budget for it. And they said for the 8.7 miles that they have, they budget $12,000 a year. That comes to about $1,300 a month. And that includes some minor capital items like the bridge that they just did at Cripplebush. And the other piece of this is we now have three letters of interest from trail groups expressing that they want to help maintain it. That's the New York New Jersey Trail Conference, Catskill Mountain Keeper, and there's another one that came in today, and I'm
no.
ADK, maybe?
ADK?
Was it AD? I don't know. I'm not going to say. I'll say there's two. I'll pull back.
Those,
perhaps. I don't know. This afternoon I was busy trying to get this thing printed.
The design of the trail and operation and maintenance O&M plan and a joint security agreement have now been negotiated. It's true. We've been
correct
through this. So I don't think we need to go any further unless anybody has any questions. The MOA does not actually say that concurrent rail and trail operations are prohibited. We've been through that as well.
Can I just ask for clarification on that one? I know we've been through it, but in terms of the answer that's here, it says the MOA allows for trail use to be added to the county's perpetual rail easement. That's what we talked about earlier. It doesn't currently, the MOA doesn't make it perpetual yet, but it allows for the possibility in the future.
That right is retained in the easement.
And that's something that you
this
have been and will...
This does not extinguish the easement.
No, I'm not worried about the... I'm talking about the trail, perpetual trail use. So that is something you will be negotiating moving forward to include in the modified agreement or the modified easement, right?
Okay. Next comment. Construction cannot start until the modified easement is negotiated.
I
copied and pasted it.
I believe you.
The agreement is highly dependent on rail banking via SDB. There has never been an accomplished for a line that has been out federal jurisdiction for nearly 40 years. We didn't write this. The Catskill Mountain Railroad could easily obtain such due to their position as a railroad. This is where we're working with the CMRR would greatly benefit the county. I'm going to caution everyone here. We are in litigation with the Catskill Mountain Railroad. We are not going to entertain questions that have anything to do with the litigation or that might be possibly related to the litigation, okay? So we have an answer here for you. Chris?
Again, we addressed some of this earlier. Under the MOA, rail banking is an option. It's not a requirement.
DT is the only owner of this property anyway.
Yeah, again, and we've, in consultations with our attorney, we don't believe that we need the current tenant to be involved for us to be successful in doing our rail banking. And we're the owner.
Next one is about long distance bicycles. We've been down that road, unless anybody wants to go there again, we'll pedal along.
What are long distance bicycles?
What? I don't
bicyclers.
Know.
Bicyclers. Oh,
good. I think he's talking about road bikes.
Yeah.
Like the skinny gauge road bikes.
Actually, touring bikes.
Touring bikes.
Yeah. Carl, I will tell you, when I was younger, I did 4,000 miles across country, and it was all on a hybrid. So to say the long distance bicycle, I would have loved to have been on this trail for that.
I rode my bike every day except Saturdays for 8 years because I delivered to Daily Freeman.
We're on page 13 of 25.
We're almost done, TJ. These are our repeaters coming up.
All right. If the agreement's been so long, why does the legislature have less than 2 weeks to review and comment on it? Do you really want us to go down this road? You will?
No.
Okay, well, shame on you.
Ken is being merciful.
2.5 million was promised in December 2013. There is no reason for another few months need prevent this money from being funded.
You want to answer?
We've been down this road. Okay. We want to get moving on this. Everybody knows
I would like to address the next one, the $2 million. It does stipulate that it's required to have a public planning process. We fully intend to do that. The reason this money hasn't been spent yet is we don't have a section of the corridor where we have a project. What we're doing is beginning up the first phase of that project, and this is the first step only.
The Butternut Creek Culvert project can commence at any time and does not require the MOA.
The Butternut Cove, for those of you that aren't familiar with the corridor, is between Shokan and Boyceville. It's about halfway in there, and it's at the where Butternut Cove comes down into the Ashokan Reservoir. There's an access issue there, and we have heard from our engineers that the optimal way to do it to save money and do it effectively is to rebuild it as you rebuild the trail. You build the trail out to it so you can get heavy equipment out to fix it. If we were not to do that, we would have to do a temporary roadway down and improve logging roads. They estimate the added cost would be $100,000 to $200,000 on that.
It was true that the county cannot secure additional funding commitments from major private donors, some of which have already committed funding to the project. Why have they already committed money to the project?
We had, for those of you who aren't familiar, we had three major organizations, the OSI, the Dyson Foundation, and Woodstock Land Conservancy, fundraised approximately $150,000 so that we could do survey, we could do some engineering assessments of Butternut Cove, we could do mapping and existing conditions. Again, what we've heard from them is if you want additional money, we need to have a project that's actually, there's a commitment to move the project forward. These would be a major capital campaign for all of these organizations. They've expressed willingness to do that, but again, we got to have a project for them to go and shop it to donors.
I think it's important to note that when a project does come about, that private funding is pretty much, we've seen in the county already that the power of private funding. The example I would give you is the Rosendale Bridge, where essentially OSI stepped up and privately funded over $1 million worth of improvements on that bridge.
There is no reason that rail operations cannot be extended to this section of the easement, which railroad station with multiple tracks and only constitutes 10% of the easement.
I think we addressed this.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the next one. Resolution 155 was not limited in any way to exclude the Ashokan easement area or any other part of the corridor. Resolution 155 did not rescind or amend 275, and we believe it's consistent with the MOA and remain county policy. The agreement can be canceled by the DEP on 120 days' notice. I think we did this already.
Unless anybody needs this again.
Okay.
Page 17.
Yep. The cost of maintaining the railroad should be estimated in hard numbers, not counting on volunteers.
I just gave you
some numbers. The report from the committee created in Resolution 155 is necessary to be incorporated into the agreement, but it is in the best long-term interest of the citizens of Ulster County, not any particularly politician's short-term interest. This vote should be delayed. I think we're getting into a debate here that really doesn't address the issues that we're here for, and we'd like to move on if that's okay with you all. The resolution also states that changes can be made to the agreement by the county executive without legislative approval. It doesn't say that. Regardless of the county, we've changed that. We've been down this road. We've modified the resolution.
The chairman has been added as a signatory.
We are now on to legislative green section, which is the last section.
Page 18 is Nana's analysis, and then it's followed by questions on page 19. There are three questions. can the county act on Resolution 187 or sign the MOA without first going through a Type 1 SECRE review?
Our position is and has been and will continue to be that this is a Type 2 action under SECRE. Council agrees. Director agrees. We've done this. This is how we operate when we're planning. We have a memo that explains it. SECRE is, you know, it's something that we have to do when we go through these processes, but there's ways to do it, and it's our position that it is a Type 2, and we're not going to be moved on that.
Will the action or contract be subject to reversal in an Article 78 proceeding? I'll answer this so he doesn't sound terrible. The county attorney sees no basis for reversal in an Article 78 proceeding. We also see no basis for litigation. So
does that mean somebody might, well, you know, every day, everything we do in this county, somebody might want to bring a lawsuit about it. Doesn't mean that it can't occur. But the fact of the matter is, I can assure you that we see numerous frivolous lawsuits in my office that we defend all the time. So, and I believe we have a very strong situation here, and I'm not concerned about it.
If we thought it was anything other than this, we would have done, you know, we would have done a different SECRE action.
I just want to reiterate that I did speak to two land use lawyers who are highly credible, and both of them suggested that this was the time because this is an action that's going to have a lot of impact.
Thank you.
Can I ask? I just want to add something because I'm not understanding it. So for the MOA, it's a Type 1. I'm sorry, it's a Type 2. So kind of like what we do with the RRA's flow control.
And what you do when you start planning a process
right.
Out with a Type 2.
But you don't have, what you don't have right now is a plan. You don't know exactly which way you're going to go.
Right.
So once you do that,
right.
It's going to be a Type 1. Because if you're going to rip up those
guys,
we have the experts.
It's real so blatant.
My sense would be is that depending upon the action, it's likely to be a Type 1 action. Over 100 acres, maybe it's likely to go through the disturbance depending upon the size of the land area disturbed. We have had some conversations about thinking about maybe doing the secret process for the entire segment and then segmenting the construction work.
Do we know, you know, what the results are? I mean, do we have an idea that it's not going to, you know, there's not going to be some kind of brownfield report or something that, you know, once we start getting into that? Do we know what we're getting into by ripping up these
slides? Well, I think with anything, when you start the environmental review process, you find out what you're getting into, and then you decide whether you need to go forward or whether you don't need to go forward. One of the things that's always included in the environmental review process is something called the no action alternative. And you can decide to take the no action alternative if what you get into is essentially over and above what you want to do.
Is that going to be within 120 days of cancellation? Because what happens if we're in 150 days?